infertility. Infertility. Visorai eishes Avram lo yoldo loy. She did not have a child. She did not give birth to Avram. V'lo shifcha mitzris u'shmo hagar. Sher shifcha. V'atoymer sarai el Avram. Hinei no atzorani Hashem yilades. Hashem has withheld me from having a child. Boy no el shifcha si. We have to find the solution. So what's the solution? I want you to take my shifcha. Ulai, maybe ibane mimena. Maybe things will work out better. No. What was your plan? Well, I mean, what exactly is the plan of this? It's a big topic of discussion.
I don't know where they got this whole idea from. I mean, it sounds like a wild thing. I mean, what does
that
have to do?
Kol ham. So you're saying you're asking a good question. Say, let's see what it says over here in Rashi. Rashi is always the ikker. Rashi, ulai ibane mimena, limate. Al mi she'ein loy banim she'ein loy banui elo horus. Very interesting Rashi. Someone that does not have children. Ulai ibone. Maybe I will be built. A binyan. Sarah's complaint is a person is meant to be, the terminology is a structure. And if I don't have a child, I'm not banui elo horus. I'm demolished. I'm a pile of rubble. Hashem created man from the earth. Offer menu adama.
Yibum to rebuild. The
Yibum is to rebuild. Very good. Yibum is loshon binyan. Binyan. Person is created from the earth. What is earth? Just earth. Pile of rubble. And the purpose of the pile of rubble is to take the raw material and to build the structure. If I don't have a child, put aside all the religious. Forget about saying Kaddish. Forget about legacy. Put aside all this stuff. These are the words, Rashi over here, some very interesting words. Limeit al mi she'ein loy banim she'ein loy banui. He's not built. Elo horus. He is demolished. Okay, you can analyze these words and study these words. Okay. Next Rashi. Ulai maybe ibane mimena bizuchus she'achnis tzorosi l'sech beisi. In the merit that I will take my maidservant into my home. That's a merit? Well, why is that called a merit?
What was the word?
Sarasi? Yeah, Sarasi means my co-wife.
Who's
merit? Sarah's merit.
Yeah,
I'm just reading you the words. Don't shoot the messenger. Bizuchus, in the merit. Sha'achnis. I will enter. I will bring in. I will bring in Sarasi, my Tzara, which basically means a co-wife. In the terminology of Gemara, Tzara means a co-wife, a rival. Now, the Gemara's terminology means a real wife. Hagar was not a real wife. Hagar was nothing. She was a shifcha.
Right.
Avram did not live with her at all. It wasn't a pelegesh. She was less than a pelegesh. He didn't live with her. She was just a maidservant. And Sarah here, Rashi, is describing her in this term that she's called a tzara. In the Gemara, in Yevamis, and throughout the whole Shas, a tzara means a full-fledged wife. And she's called a tzara relative to the other wife. One woman, they're competing with, each wife is competing for the attention of their husband. So each wife is taking away the husband's undivided attention to the wife. So it's a tzara. You're an annoyance. I'm trying to communicate with my husband and you're taking up his time. You are diverting his attention from me to you. So that's the way we use the word tzara in Chazal is different than the way Rashi is using the word tzarasi.
So what status does she have?
I don't know. Let's see. Bizuchus, a merit. She'achnes tzaras l'sechbeisi. In that merit, k'moy she'omar nosim l'kim sochor. That's referring to Rachel and Leah, where Leah said, I gave my shifcha, a zilpa, to my husband. Okay, whatever it is. That's not the point I want to make over here is, we have a situation here where Sarah was infertile and she wanted to have a child. Rashi tells us some of the terminology and the solution of the day was that she would take her maidservant and marry her off to her husband Avram and she would have a child, and Sarah would raise the child. Kol hamagadel yosoim besoich besoi ki ilu yoldoi. By basically, she would be a surrogate mother. She would Hagar would conceive with the Zera Shel Avraham, and the condition was from the very, very beginning, this was the condition. You will be the carrier. You'll be the carrier, and it'll be your egg. Hagar is going to be, it's going to be her egg, and it's going to be the Zera Shel Avraham. But the condition is, I will then take this child, that's what it seems, and I will raise the child in the ways of Hashem, and this will be my child to a very large degree, and not necessarily the child of Hagar. You can debate this back and forth, what eventually happened. Sarah had her own child, so she gave up. It gets very, very complicated.
Well, or else she should be zechut to have her own children.
No, that's not, it doesn't, that's it doesn't
the way
seem.
I've always understood it.
Ulai ibane, I have to study.
Through the giving on, I will be able to have children.
Is that what it means? I'm not so sure that's. No, I don't.
I think that's Pasha Pshat.
That's
one question.
Yeah. I hear what you're saying. Rav Mordechai is saying that this was a plan. Rav Mordechai is suggesting that Sarah never ever wanted to raise this child. She wanted a zechus, a mitzvah, to give someone else pleasure, and this will be that Hagar would have her own child, and in that merit, I will have my own child. So I hear what you're saying, but I don't. What you want to read this into Rashi? Bizuchosh achnes sarasti l'sech beisi, then I will have my own child. I hear what you're saying, in a Hanami. If I'm not mistaken, I can't tell you the source at this moment in time, but I do remember learning this, that there are Rishonim that do not learn like that. It could be this is what Rashi means. I do not, I'm not denying it. It could be 100% correct. Ayin panim l'Torah. But I vaguely remember that there is an approach that Sarah was very realistic. She was not capable of having children. And the goal was, we're going to have a child. I will raise this child as my own. I'm just going to use Hagar as a surrogate to produce a human being in the laboratory. She's no different than a test tube in the laboratory that will produce a human being with a donor's egg, and I will then take that creation and I will raise it in the ways of Hashem, and it will establish me on this world. I will then be Bonui. Okay, there. I'm not Rav Mordechai. I'm not questioning. I'm not denying that what your approach is absolutely correct. But there are other approaches also. Okay. Now this is a trigger for our topic today of what is called IVF, in vitro fertilization, and its predecessor, artificial insemination. And by extension, today we live in a world that is extremely complicated, where there are other techniques, okay? There are other techniques in the modern world called surrogacy, and then there is even something more complex called reproductive organ transplants. Okay, today
they're all controversial.
There are four techniques today in being partners with Hashem and creating a person. Okay, besides the natural process, okay, there is what is called artificial insemination. Artificial insemination, the truth is, it appears in the Gemara, the sugya of Ambati. Some hold that Yirmiyahu Hanavi was conceived through what they called AI. Okay, AI is just a short term for artificial insemination, which really is accurately called IUI. The real term for artificial insemination is IUI, which means intrauterine insemination. That's the real term. The real term is IUI. Today that term has been replaced by AI, but that's confusing because AI really now means artificial intelligence. So you have to know all the acronyms. Okay, but the olden days it was called IUI, intrauterine insemination. Today we have much more complex things called in vitro fertilization. In vitro fertilization can be where the sperm and the egg are returned to the wife, to the one who provides the egg, or which is much more complicated. Surrogacy is where the woman who provides the egg is not capable of carrying the baby in pregnancy, so they hire, they pay a woman to serve as the surrogate mother, and she is given a fertilized egg. A husband and wife, a husband donates the sperm, the wife donates the egg, and in a laboratory it is fertilized, and then the fertilized egg is put in another woman for money, and with a legal document that when she will carry this child for 9 months in her womb, and then when the child is born, she will return it to the couple who have given their DNA, their sperm and egg, in order to have this child. Okay, so these, now there are many dimensions and many, many topics. I have over here in front of me this book. We used it once before, but on a topic that was not controversial. This book from Mr., he doesn't want to be called Rabbi, Tzvi Reisman from Los Angeles. I think he lives down in Eretz Yisrael. Tzvi Reisman is a noted expert in this field. He has a stellar reputation in being a Baki Muflug in the sugya of infertility, all the infertility. Besides that, he's a very, very wealthy person, a philanthropist, and he's a very well known person. He's a very big Talmud Chacham. He has published a number of books with Art Scroll about Rosh Chodesh. I think four books about the sugya of Rosh Chodesh. But that's a side project. One of his major projects is delving into the sugya of infertility, and he had published this book in the year 2014. This book is from 2014, it's probably reprinted. It's obviously published by Art Scroll, even though nowhere in this book will you find the name Art Scroll. Okay, it has all of the trappings, all of the simanim mufakim that this was published by Art Scroll, but you will not find their name anywhere in this book. And it's obvious Art Scroll published this. It can't undeniable.
It wasn't endorsed by Art Scroll, but they may have used
it. The reason why they did not put their name on this is in a very important volume. This volume is extremely important for Rabbanim to have and to know and to study, to understand the issues, to understand. He explains it with incredible clarity, and he deals with everything under the sun. It's an awesome, awesome book to get for people like me who know nothing, just to familiarize yourself with just the basics. So when the Balabas comes to a Rav and says he has an issue, the Balabas should know what he's talking about and give him proper guidance to seek out poiskim who are mumchim and experts in this field. You have to just basically know, no one's going to paskin on these things today by themselves. Obviously, there are a handful of people today in the world who paskin on these matters. There are organizations with very big rabbanim that deal with this. But every person just should know the basic terminology, the basic issues. And there's a very, very big array of issues in this field in all of its dimensions. And this book is an extremely critical work because it presents for a very, very pure Torah hashkafa of what the issues are.
What's the name of it?
The name of the book is Rotz Ketzvi. It all says Rotz Ketzvi, that's the name, Rotz Ketzvi. Rotz Ketzvi, run like a deer.
All is farmer written
that all of a sudden. It just says, all it says on the thing is an in-depth exploration of the laws pertaining to fertility, yichus, marital relationships, transplants. Okay? So
is
this
he
is.
Any
no, he doesn't give. He tells
just
you
the issues.
Very, very little in the area of psak issues and concepts. It's incredible. It's very dense. Take me a month to finish to read the whole thing. Just certain chapters. It's an incredible, incredible sefer. Art Scroll obviously published it. He probably published it privately, and they don't want to put their name on it because it's a very very, very sensitive topic. It's very graphic. Okay, it's not for children to read. It's very graphic, and the issues are very, very sensitive issues in the area of halacha. Lomali Litzara Hazois. Anyone here was a publishing company like Art Scroll, what are you looking for trouble? Okay, it's controversial, so they published it, but obviously they didn't put the name on it. And I, Baruch Hashem, I have it. It was published in the year 2014, and it's a very, very powerful sefer. Now, There are many different top dimensions. I really wanted to talk about something that's very, very, we'll probably end up doing 2 days on this, probably do tomorrow also. More, not to get into any of the nitty gritty, the stuff that's most sensitive. But once already we're doing it, I think as a hakdama, just to talk a little bit about the basic concepts of what it's about, and then go into things which are, I think, very relevant to Sara and Avram. There's a very interesting parallelism between a certain topic. The main topic we'll probably talk about tomorrow, we'll get to, is what happens if there is a couple who has permission from a Rav, which is very controversial. The husband will give his Zera, and the wife will give an egg, and it will be sent to a laboratory, and it will be fertilized in a laboratory, and it will then be put in a surrogate mother. Okay, we'll call her the carrier. And when this is done in the United, throughout the entire world, and the condition is, after the baby is born, 9 months later, it will be returned to the parents, the ones who provided the zera, the biological. Now, we're saying the biological parents is the one, the father and the mother. Well, you're saying that the carrier is not called biological mother? That's part of the controversy. Not so posher to say that. That's right. There's the egg and there's the sperm, but the baby has to develop for 9 months in a host. What goes on there? Does science really fully understand how this works? To say that the host doesn't give any DNA? It's not so posh, not so simple. Whatever the case is, we'll discuss some of the issues, but here's the shiloh. I don't want to go talk about these things a little bit too graphic.
They never tested the baby to compare the DNA with the mother.
I'm sure they did. I'm sure they have what to say. I'm sure there are things that they don't know about. And every situation is a little bit different. That's not really what I want to talk about. What I'm talking about is what happens if after 9 months the carrier says, you know something, I have developed an emotional connection to this attachment to this fetus that I've been carrying for 9 months. I'm not giving it back to you. Tough luck. It's mine. This happened in the United States, happened all over the world.
Yeah.
It happened in the United States, the first case, I'll tell you all the dates, he has all the whole history with that. So in the United States, when this happened for the first time, it took 2 years for the court to decide the halacha, and after 2 years, the court decided that the carrier must return the baby to the biological parents.
Who kept the baby in law?
The surrogate. The surrogate kept it for 2 years. She refused to return it, and they took it to court, and it took them 2 years to paskin the halacha, and the court, the secular court, decided you must give it back, and it created an enormous controversy all over the world. And he has a beautiful chapter here. There's no psak halacha. What does the Torah say about exactly this case? If today a couple shomer Torah mitzvahs gets the green light from Rabbanim, if they do, not so simple that they will get the green light, that the husband and the wife will donate their DNA, husband the sperm, the wife her egg, and they will then put this into a surrogate mother, and now you have to deal with what kind of surrogate mother will Rabbanim advise her to give it to, a Jew or a non-Jew? That's a very complicated issue. Should you give this to a Jewish host, a Jewish surrogate, who's a married woman, or a Jewish surrogate who is a single woman, or to a non-Jew that's married, a non-Jew that's not married? Very complicated. A single woman's Jewish, not Jewish.
Jewish.
Not so posh to give it to a Jewish woman.
She has to be willing. How many Jewish?
And we're not talking about willing. Of course they're willing. Of course, what are you going to do? Are you going to do against their will? Of course they're willing. What's the shaila? What is this? Of course they're willing. Okay, the question is, who do you solicit? Who do you solicit? And they pay them a lot of money. This is not a cheap enterprise. Okay, you pay them a lot of money. And it's all done with a document and a shtar. It's done with all the legalities. You cross all the T's, dot the I's. And then what will happen if, let's say, theoretically, and it's not really theoretically, this happens in Eretz Yisrael, it happens in America, where it's done according to, under the supervision of Gedolei Yisrael, and then after the baby is born, even though you signed all the shtaros, and you made all the kinyanim, you picked up the handkerchief, you signed the shtaros, you had edim with kibudim, you did the whole spiel, and the surrogate says, I'm not giving it back to you. It's my baby. What do you do? I'll tell you, there's a case the other way around. There's a real case, the Rabban the other around, where the parents, the one who donated the egg, the one who donated the sperm, after they fertilized the egg in the laboratory, and it was already put into the surrogate, those two parents got divorced. They got divorced. They had a fight, they got divorced with the get. They got divorced, and they said, and they told, and what?
From the book it seems so.
They got divorced. And they told the surrogate, you can keep it. And the surrogate said, I don't want it. I don't want it. Mamish the other way around. Mamish pumfakert. The parents had a change up. They don't want it. And the surrogate says, I was paid a lot of money to carry the baby for 9 months, and that's it. Once in 9 months, the baby is born. I have no emotional connection to this baby. I don't want it.
Even
take it back. No, what? No one wanted it. Just the other, mamish pumfakert. The case in America that's a celebrated called Brown. The name of the, I think the couple was Mr. and Mrs. Brown. It's a celebrated case. Solomon's Wisdom, it's called. Split the child. Got a name. You know, Shlomo HaMelech. In Sefer Melachim, the Chochma Shlomo is when the two women came and they were, whose child is this? So Shlomo says, cut the baby in half. So this the case in the Supreme Court. It was called the case of Solomon's Wisdom. Because both parents wanted the baby. That's what the name of the case is called, something like that. Both parents, the donors, wanted the baby, and the surrogate wanted to renege on the contract, to violate the contract to keep the baby. And she says, who cares about the contract? It's my baby. I don't care. Don't chab me with diktuk. I want to keep the baby.
So it was,
that's a given. That's a giving. The money you get back. The woman who's a surrogate says, you can have the money. I'm moichel the money. It's right. But it came out of my womb. It's my baby. I don't care. I signed the contract. It's my baby. It took the Supreme Court 2 years. 2 years to decide, according to American law, the Constitution, that the baby has to go back to the donors. What does halacha say about this? What does halacha say about this case? What does halacha say about the other way around? Now, before we get to that,
is there a
pig in that? What? There are a lot of shilas. There's a fascinating presentation of this topic. It is unbelievable. Okay, it is unbelievable. What does the halacha say about it?
It could be related to the
yichus
of the child.
Oh, the yichus of many issues and incredible yisoidus that come out of this. Now, before we get that, let's just discuss a little bit of an overview of this topic. And it's really incredibly fascinating what he writes here in the beginning. At the very beginning, this is what I told you, is a chapter towards the end of the book. But in the beginning, you just discuss some basic history and basic yisoidus in this concept. Now, the truth is, this thing of we mentioned there are four different types of techniques that are used today in the world of infertility. What I know from nothing. I'm just telling you what it says over here. I'm just giving a little overview what it says over here, just in order to give a hakdama to get to the shaila, which we're probably not going to finish today. We'll probably have to wait until tomorrow to finish all the detail. But let's at least get a little bit of a hakdama. First of all, the first time it was recorded in the world, the basic AI, artificial insemination, in the modern world is in the year 1866. Okay, 1866, in which country? I don't even know to say which country it was. In America, in the United States. Now, the truth is, Chazal mentioned this. Chazal, he has a whole chapter, I didn't read that chapter yet, but Ambati, a bath. Yeah. A bath where supposedly a man goes into a bath and he releases Shechva Zera, however it happens. And then a woman goes into that bath. And then somehow the Zera of the Ish enters into the woman. And one day she wakes up, she's pregnant. So this is presented in Chazal. Chazal, in fact, say that Yirmiyahu HaNavi, mm-hmm. was conceived in such a fashion. Okay, Yirmiyahu, the Halakha Yirmiyahu Hanavi, was conceived in such a fashion through Ambati, which is an artificial insemination. Okay, that's clear as day. So this happened 3,000 years ago. So it's a novelty in the modern world that the first time there was such a thing called IUI, intrauterine insemination, took place in the year 1866. So what's going on? Chazal. So either you have to say that today, Mishtana HaTeva, that it'll never happen today, something like that today. It's just the Mitzis is impossible that for a person to go into a bath and to release Shechva Zeret, a woman then goes in the bath afterwards for her to become pregnant. Basically, I'm just talking out of my head. I don't know if I'm saying this whole nonsense.
What do you mean Eliyahu?
Okay, that's what we're going to get to that. We're going to get to these things a little later on. But let's just say that it's just a little bit strange that the first time that this concept this Yirmiyahu, the first time that this happened in 1866, and it happened already 3,000 years ago. So either, I'm just thinking with you out loud, is that today science will say that happening in a bathtub is impossible.
But impossible. Also,
it has to be a lot of things the Gemara says. And a lot of, one thing I can tell you, in this topic, all of those type of things out the window. Not out the window, Chas Shalom. It's true. Chazal say it. The words of Chazal are MS, but they have to be understood in light of science as it's understood today. And I'll give you some examples. 100%. What?
Intentional versus unintentional.
In this topic, you don't bring into what Chazal say. Let's look at the reality, and then we work backwards. Because the reality is the reality. Now, I'm going to prove it to you in a most shocking way. You're right, Chazal say a lot of things. There's a whole collection of things which basically the Mitzias today defies what Chazal say about a lot of these things. And we're going to get to that. Hold off for one moment, please. Now let's go back. So over here, this thing obviously was, this concept already existed 3,000 years ago. It's in the Gemara. The Gemara talks about Ambati. It's all over Chazal. Mm-hmm. So either Nishtana HaTeva, and the reason why you say Nishtana HaTeva, I'm just reading, I know nothing, but it says over here is, in the situation of artificial insemination, it's a very complicated procedure. It doesn't just happen in 5 minutes. It's a very complicated procedure that has to be done today in the modern world for it to work. Just because a husband is a donor and then the wife goes into a medical facility and they artificially insert the zera into the Isha's uterine, into her womb, just because they do this, it's not like, oh, this just happens like, you know, it's klachaya.
It doesn't take.
And there are many sophisticated things that have to be done for it to work. So you tell a scientist today, oh, a man goes into the bath, and then the woman goes into the bath, and she's pregnant. They'll look at you, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. That doesn't work like that. But the Gemara says it does. Okay, so we have to acknowledge that the Chazal say it does.
It's like winning the Powerball, 1 in 33 billion.
Whatever it means, I don't know the science. Chazal acknowledge this reality. Let's not ignore that. 3,000 years ago, Yirmiyahu HaNavi was conceived in such a fashion, according to what I. So how does that work? It's even more strange, right? It's even more strange. Okay, and yet, the first time that this reality existed in the mind of humanity is in the year 1866. And it created an incredible sensation. As you can imagine, being childless is the greatest pain in this world. And this week's parasha, look at Sarah. Look at the tsar of Sarah. Ula yibon heimena. I mean, those words are just heart-wrenching. Ula yibane hemena on Rosh Hashanah. What is the most heart-wrenching part of davening? When they lain about Chana in the Haftorah. They lain Chana, they're women that are sobbing. It's a very emotional thing. This is So could you imagine the year 1866? Guess what? Women who are childless, there's hope. Ula ibane. It was a sensational, the way he describes this. Can't imagine, like, today in our lifetimes, what was sensational in our lifetimes? Okay, this already happened. My parents told me when Kennedy was shot, that was like, there wasn't a living person who did not know where he was when he was shot. My father was telling me, you cannot imagine that day when Kennedy was shot. You cannot imagine. Cannot even be massing. Nothing compared to that when Kennedy was shot. When they landed on the moon, 9/11, my father told me, was nothing connected. My father, I don't know, maybe he was the same age, he told me, but he said, when Kennedy was shot, you can't imagine. Okay, when they landed on the moon, okay, before my time, they landed on the moon. The whole world stood still when they landed on the moon.
I don't remember.
What?
I don't remember.
You don't remember?
That was an event that was led up to. We knew it was going to happen.
Okay, 9/11. 9/11. Okay, to a very large degree, change the world. There are a few events, you know, in a person's lifetime where you can say, I guess, you know, they dropped a nuclear bomb, atomic bomb. Hiroshima.
Pearl Harbor.
There are certain events that happen that the whole world is shaking. Okay. When this event happened, the world shook. Because the words of Sari Menu, Ulai Ibon Heimena, that's the first time you have on record in history, in the Bible, a woman has hope. She'll have a child. Think about that. Until that point in time, was there ever a situation in the Torah? People had hope of having a child? Either you had a child, you didn't have a child. You have all the people in the beginning of the Torah. This one had a child. Either you had a child or you didn't have a child. If you didn't have a child, knew that's how it is. A new Mitzias comes into this world with Sari Menu. Surrogate motherhood. Okay, it's not exactly in vitro, but such a principle. Ulai Ibon Heimena. I'm gonna give her to my husband. She'll have a child according to Nara Murchayam, acknowledge other Mahalchim, but some learn she'll have a child. I'm gonna raise that child. I'm gonna be mashpia on that child, and that child will be mine. Hamagadel Yosayim B'soich Beisoy Ki Ilu Yoldai. Some of the Gedolim suggest that you yoytze the mitzvah of Priya Urevia by adopting children. Mamashi Mekayim the mitzvah Doraisa Pru Urevu by adopting children. Ulai Yibona Heimena. So could you imagine this happening in this world? So obviously whatever happens by the Goyim, it created a major controversy by the Gedolei Yisrael. What's the halacha? Can we take advantage? There are many Jews who want to have children. Today the statistics are, he writes over and over in this book, for every 100 children born today in this world, the whole world, there are 8 billion people in this world, one out of 100 is born through in vitro. Not even talking about artificial insemination, we're talking about in vitro. In 1 in 100, the statistics are 1 in 100 babies born in the world today are born through in vitro.
Non-religious circles now, they push for that even if they could have. There's a whole push. We're going to have a child. Let's put everything aside. We're going to go back to work. And then when we're 33, we'll do it.
And we'll decide what color hair the baby has. And if he has a big nose and the type.
Yes.
All right, I don't want to get it. There's no end to this topic. Let's keep our focus. In Eretz Yisrael, the statistics are, he writes this, or by side. This is written 2014. He writes in Eretz Yisrael, 4%. 4 out of every 100 babies born in Eretz Yisrael are born through in vitro. Not artificial insemination. It's probably a lot more. In vitro. In vitro, that's the statistics. That's what he writes here. He's not a lawyer, Rabbi Reisman. Tzvi Reisman. He 4 out of 100 are born in Eretz Yisrael through in vitro. In vitro fertilization, IVF. No, you're the own. You do it yourself. The laboratory, they take the zera of the husband, the beitza of the wife, they remove it, they fertilize it in the laboratory, and then they return it. And the mother, the wife, is healthy, and she carries it for 9 months. The complicated cases are where the wife is incapable of carrying the baby for 9 months, and they need to come on to a surrogate to carry it for 9 months. That's in vitro with a surrogate. That's much, much more complicated. Now, before we get to the in vitro, let's go to the simplest case. The simplest case is AI, artificial insemination, where they're not taking anything out of the mother. They're not taking anything. The mother is a healthy woman. She can have children. For whatever the reason is, there's a problem where they don't conceive. So through this technique, a doctor can take zera from the husband and can artificially insert it into the woman's uterine to fertilize it in its natural setting, and she will have a baby.
Is that considered
shlichus
or not?
What do you mean shlichus? It's a controversial thing. So when this happened in 1866, mm-hmm. many Gedolei Yisrael were presented with the shaila: is this permitted? And there are only two problems with this. It's interesting. Only two problems. And the two problems are in the world of Kabbalah, which we have to appreciate. Being moitzi zera levatola is worse than shvichas dam avodah zarah and gilei rice put together. Okay, in the world of Kabbalah, okay, in the world of halacha in nigle, it's not even on the radar. It's not even mentioned in Shulchan Aruch. I don't think it's in Shulchan. It doesn't even exist. It's not the tayag mitzvah. It's not part of the tayag mitzvahs. Being moitzi zera levatola doesn't exist in the olam hanigle. In the world, in the Olam HaNigle, Tayag Mitzvos, there's no zecher of this. There's no such thing, there's no mention whatsoever being Moitzi Zera outside of a marital relation is usher. There's no mention of it. But in the Mesorah, it is literally worse. I'm not joking with you. You ever pick one of those breast of books on the street? It's a rated R. Don't ask me. I don't know what goes on. I really don't know anything about it. I'm just telling you words. Did you ever pick up a breast of book on the street? They used to give out the breast of books. It's all about one topic. Obsessive OCD on one topic, which is a little bit over the top. It's Mimoitzi Zera Levatola is mamish worse than Avodah Zarah, Gili Arayis, and Shvi Chastam put together. So all the Gedolei Yisrael kimat b'li yoytzei min haklal. I don't shoot me yet. Let me tell you, hear me out to the end. When this thing came about, they said, number one, this involves something unnatural, being moitzi zera levatola, not levatola, obviously, but being moitzi zera, and then being preserved in a medical facility, and then being treated, and then artificially inseminating a person's wife. So we never heard of this before. Ambati was an accident. It's not a technique. The case of Ambati was ma'iz shohaya kachaya. We're not talking about a person who wants to have children. So this is the way you're going to have children. To do something like this, it was a shock that the Gedolei Yisrael. They were numb, mamish numb. What? This is a technique of how you have children?
Right.
Oh, listen, we're holding now 2022. Listen, I told you. We're going to go mikotzel kotze, where Rav Sternbach says it's a mitzvah to do this.
Wow.
Okay, wait. That's fourth round. But let's go back before he was born, 1866. It numbed the consciousness of Gedolei Yisrael. This is what you do? Out of your mind? You don't have children, so you don't have children. It's not Hashem's ratzon you should have children. Number two, and this is a very big problem, is you trust these doctors? Who says they're going to take the zera of the husband to inseminate the wife?
You don't trust.
Oh, today they have Pua. And they have, yeah, let's talk about 1866. Hear me out. 1866. This was a highly specialized field done in secret laboratories, and no one even knew what they're doing. Who on the, you know, it's not like today you can go online, you can learn how to make a nuclear bomb. Okay? This is highly specialized information. Only Yechidim Sheb Yechidim had access to this technology and knowledge and this and that. Who says a woman goes into the hospital, she comes out pregnant, who says she's pregnant with the zera of her husband? You know, the doctor, he needs to have results. The fraud that goes on in the medical field today is today, 2022, about getting results and fudging results is unbelievable. Unbelievable what goes on in order to get the money, what they'll do in order to fudge the results. And nowadays, it's a real deal. Everyone acknowledges this. That's why today, you know, it depends. You know, people do whatever they want to go do, but people who are very, very worried about this, so they have an organization called PUA, where they have mashkichim. They have two people have to be present every single time the zera is handled. Every time it's very expensive. You know, this whole thing, the money adds up like crazy. But let's just talk about 1866. The Gedolei Yisrael came out with a mamish, a fury, with an iser gomor b'li yotze min haklal, artificial insemination, is osur choyk v'lo yavar b'li yotze min haklal, for two reasons. Number one, it's moitzi zera levatola. This is not a mahalach and how you have children. Number two, there's no way you can trust what they're doing. They have to produce results. There are many times the technology then was not so sophisticated, and many times the zera of the husband is not adequate, potent. Not potent. So who says they're not taking zera from someone else, from a sperm bank, a chvase, whatever, in order, who knows what they're doing? You can't trust them. It was deemed to be categorically forbidden with no exceptions whatsoever. Over time, many rabbanim, when a woman comes to a Rav and says, Ulai ibane hemena, you can't say no. Is it really usur? It's zero levat. Is it really levatola? Just because we never did anything like this before, and just because in the world of Kabbalah, such a thing, the world is coming to an end, and you have all these Maamar Chazal, and you're doing things that we never heard of. In the Olam Hanigla, is it usur? Where does it say that it's usur?
What does levatola mean?
Exactly! What does levatola mean? Exactly! What does levatola mean? Who says it's usur? You're going to tell every person that I know what goes on in Shemayim. I know that you do something like this. Really? You know what goes on in Shemayim? The Torah was in the Torah l'malachi hasharis. It's an amazing concept that the evolution of halacha, it's just mind-boggling how it took generations for Gedolei Yisrael to say, why is it usur? Is it really usur? Is it really usur to do such a thing? I mean, they talk about driverless cars. Today, go in a car on Shabbos, Machal Shabbos. Why is it usur? Why is it usur? They talk about this, these type of things. But at the time, in 1866, it was usur b'li shum yotze min haklal. Okay. Now, let's go further. Then they lightened up and they said, you know, you have proper supervision. And in fact, you have doctors today that are shomrei Torah mitzvos yirei shemayim, who guard and know exactly what's going on. We can trust them, and they're mashkichim, and there's a network of a system that there's shemira, foolproof shemira, that they should not interchange the zera of another man. So that takes care of that. And as far as batala, who says it's levatala? It's not levatala. Okay, so over time it became pretty much permitted. Almost permitted. Then came along in vitro. In vitro is a much more recent development. We're not up to surrogatehood. Surrogatehood is a very complicated issue, but let's deal with in vitro. In Eretz Yisrael, 1 in 100. 1 in 100. 400. Can you imagine? Who's paying for this? Israeli, you know what it just cost? They pay? Its insurance covers this?
Insurance covers in Israel up to five.
Five and in America?
America, you pay $25,000 each shot.
There's no insurance for this?
I
25, that's only 25 UK? Unbelievable. Okay, so in Eretz Yisrael, it's four in a hundred. How did this happen? So the first time in vitro happened was 1978, not all that long ago. 1978, July 25th, 1978, the first IVF baby was born to the Brown family. Okay, it was born. That was the first time. Okay, that was the first. Eretz Yisrael, the first IVF baby in Eretz Yisrael was in 1982. Now, in vitro is a bit more complex because they're taking from the Isha the Beitza, and they're taking from the husband the Zera. Now, why would in vitro be more complex? Would be a bigger issue than?
I would think it would be easier. Very simple. Basically, it's
the... It's not easier. It's much harder because you have to deal with the egg also outside of its natural habitat. And we're laymen, so we don't appreciate the science behind it of how many things have to be done in order to preserve a certain, you know, chemical balance and temperatures and pH levels. It's not so... Obviously, it's much, much more complicated. And because it's much more complicated, it gives... There's a lot more... potential for fraud, for, you know, for a lot more shmira. Another thing they talk about, I know is that there's a lot of waste of zera, because when they use the husband's zera, they only use one mashu shebemashu. When it was in vitro, or when it was artificial insemination, there's less waste. Again, these are Kabbalistic concepts. Now, I prepared this yesterday. Let me just the case of IVF in halacha is a bit more challenging because let me just find the page. Okay.
Probably also doing more selective choosing of what they're going to use.
Right. All right. Right.
Samples that they have.
And where is it leading to? There was a lot of unknowns. There were a lot of unknowns in the IVF. One second, let me find. Okay, here it is. Okay. Okay. Why would IVF be more complicated? Moitzel Vatala. And Shmira, really the same issues. Okay, there's other issues also dealing with Nida. A woman is in Nida. Okay, these procedures of taking out the egg cause blood. There are different issues of Nida. So when they take the egg and they transplant it back inside, you're dealing with shalos of Nida as well. So there's these. Okay, what else is? Because when they do the procedure to return the fertilized egg into the Isha, you're dealing with shilas. Is this called that she's conceiving in a state of Knidis Karis? Knidis Karis. So if you're dealing with a procedure, you're dealing with a procedure of conception, and you're interfering and you're getting involved in this physically, and you're causing there to be blood.
These
are all you leave to the big Gedolei Yisrael on how they deal. I don't know anything. I'm just telling you words here. Okay, these are way over my head. This is something you need real mumchin to understand how all this works and understand different shashas. Now, this is just something. Okay, now let me now. There was another element. There's another element which totally spooked out the Gedolei Yisrael. And that is, it was a big enough chiddush that there can be something called artificial insemination. To now take the egg of an isha out, and to take the zera and mamish fertilize it in a laboratory, in a test tube, it opened up a question. This is, as I'm telling what we said over here, amongst all, not only amongst the Goyim at the time, but amongst the Gedolei Yisrael, what's next? I recently saw a video, Mamish, I saw a video recently they're envisioning that within a couple of years, you can buy a device, like a big egg, and the husband, Mamish to do this, the husband gives a zera, and the Isha gives the egg, and they
shake it up,
and they do whatever they do, and then after the laboratory does what it does, you go home, and you have a device on your dining room table. You have like a little device, and it's a device. You plug it into the wall, and when after 9 months, they have a video somewhere of this, the bell rings, and you gather around this device, and you open it up, and there's a baby. There's a
baby. Baby has to be fed by the mother.
Why? Technology today, you can't believe what they can do. They have, what's next? The next thing is, you don't need the mother altogether. They can an incubator. You could develop they've done this with animals already. I saw a video. They've done this with animals. The entire animal is developed artificially in an incubator. The whole baby. They take the zera and the beitza. They fertilize it artificially and they put it in a machine and the machine has everything it needs.
But the baby has to have an IV to be fed.
Yeah, the machine has everything ready. The machine knows what it's. The machine, they've done it with animals, so they claim. I've saw videos. Oh, that's a different issue. Cloning is different. Cloning is not a different technique. The question was raised when they started doing this: what's next? What's next? What's on the agenda here? And then there's going to be.
They can take skin cells.
That's cloning. You take out the nucleus. You take out the nucleus of the male of the. For a male, you don't need zera. In order to cloning is you need an egg of a woman. You take out the nucleus of the cells in the egg, and you take anything, any DNA of a man, skin, and you take a cell and you remove the nucleus of a cell of a male, and you put it the two together, and somehow the cells begin to split. They begin to split, and it creates a human being. So there's no zera. Cloning does not involve zera of a male. It does still involve an egg of an isha. They need an egg of an isha. They have to manipulate the egg. They have to manipulate the DNA of a male, and they have to cause it for the cells to mutate, to split, and then you have a human being. Wow, that's interesting. Where do we have that in the Torah? Is that called pre-revia? What, that's called Frankenstein? Is that called Sefer Yetzirah? Is that how the Maral made a goylem? If he made a goylem? What is that all about? What's that all about? Is there even menachai on this animal? What were the Shvatim doing? Were they cloning? What were they doing? They made from the Sefer Yetzirah. They had technology that we didn't have? What exactly did they do? How does all this work? What exactly is a goylem? You know, I was shocked. Mamish shocked. The Mishnah Berurah is the most practical Sefer in the world. So I was learning recently about a minion, about a simin nun dalin nun hey nun vav in Mishnah Berurah. And the Mishnah Berurah, in the middle of the Mishnah Berurah, he says, he has a shaila, an Adam that was created with a Sefer Yetzirah, can you be mitzaref him to a minion? What? And the Mishnah Berurah quotes this? The Mishnah Berurah is not a Sefer of hocus pocus. Would you believe this? The Mishnah Berurah, I think he concludes, you cannot. You cannot be mitzaref a person. What kind? That's not a relevant question today. The Mishnah Berurah, would you believe that the Mishnah Berurah quotes, in the middle of the Mishnah Berurah, all the laws of mitzvah for a minute person, how many people you need for a minion? You need a person is sleeping, can you use them? Person is middle Shemona Esrei. He goes all the different shilas. And then in the middle he says, by the way, a person that was created with the Sefer Yetzirah, you can't be mitzvah of him to a minion. The Mishnah Berurah quotes this? You would never in a million years expect the Mishnah Berurah to quote Saita Shahalacha. I was shocked out of my mind when I saw this. You know, maybe the Mishnah Berurah knew something that we don't know. Because this technology is advancing at such a rapid rate where not what's next? Next is you're gonna be very selective. How tall will my child be? Male, female? What color hair? Will he have a big nose? You know, you'll design him on a computer. Sit down and let's design a child. We'll design his shoulder width, design his eyebrows, every little detail we'll design, and we'll manipulate all the DNA to produce exactly the type of child that you want. That's what's going on today in the secular world. And in 1978, when this happened, the Gedolei Yisrael, they asked, where is this leading? This is no good. This goes against our hashkafa. This is no good. And they came out with a fury, with call everyone with one signum, with nuschois that you would not even believe you come out of your mouth. Osur, osur, osur. It is osur to take the egg of an isha, the zera of an ish, bring it together in the laboratory in a test tube, fertilize it, and put it back in the wife. Osur, osur, osur. Number one, first of all, the shailos of nida. Number two, the shailos of zera levatola, which are much more complicated in this case because you're only being very selective. And number three, how could you trust what they're doing? And number four, what's next? Where is this leading? The Stipler said, I think he said that it is osur mida osur. I think the nuschais he wrote are unbelievable. What he said osur, and he said, any child that was created from such a technique, nothing will become of him. Could you imagine? Nothing will become of him. It will be a terrible surah. Hear what he says? The Chazon Ish categorically said that this is Chazon Ish. Osir. Wait, hold off. I told you, you don't leave now until I finish off. They said that the nuschois that they used, the Chazon Ish said that this is osur, and okay, the Brisker Rav also said all the Gedolei Yisrael came out piv libeshavin that it is categorically osur. Now listen to this, Rav Sternbach, okay, the head of the Eid HaCharedus. Sternbach is a goyin olam. There are four teshuvos, four times that he put in writing his thoughts on this topic. Four times that he put in writing what he held on this. He has it all. First teshuva that he wrote was in 1991, care of Moshe Sternbach, and there he says that it is categorically forbidden. Forbidden under no condition. It's Moshe Zer Levatola, and we can't trust them. All this, all the yisodes that we've spoken about. And he quotes the Stipler. The Stipler said it is categorically forbidden. He spoke to, he seems like he did a lot of research, and at the end was, there's nothing to talk about. The Gedolei Yisrael answered this. It's osur, osur, osur. Okay, time passed. Ulai Ibona Hemena. Ulai Ibona Hemena. In 1997, he wrote another teshuva, revisiting the topic. And he said, I'm not paskening anymore on this. I'm not paskening. He said, I'm not comfortable saying that it's mutter, but I basically retract my psak that it's osur. And he writes, the haboicher yivchar. Let the one who chooses decide. Haboicher yivchar. I'm not comfortable saying that it's mutter. Whatever. Talk to your local Orthodox rabbi. I don't want to get involved in this anymore. Change his mind. 6 years. Let's fast forward. Fast forward to 2011. He writes, it's mutter. There are conditions. He writes, you should be married for 10 years first without having children, and you don't have any other children. Okay, all these conditions. Right. Bottom line, ulai ibon heimena. It's mutter. Fast forward, even more recently, it's a mitzvah. If you don't have children, this is the way you do it. It's a mitzvah. You're mechuyev to do it. Mekayim the mitzvah pri uraviyah. Hear myself? The same person, Rav Shtermach, he's the Ravad, the Roish HaBezdin of the Eda HaCharedus. He's the chief rabbi, the chief Charedi Poisek. Categorically forbidden. I don't want to paskin on this anymore. It's a mutter, it's a mitzvah. Four on record. Isn't that amazing? Isn't that amazing? They asked, in Bnei Barak, they once opened up years ago a facility to start doing this. A facility. And someone made a machol like crazy. In this shtot, this is the Chazonish's territory. The Chazonish said that it is osur. How dare you go open up a medical fertility center in Bnei Barak? Bnei Barak, they probably have the most.
In Givat Shmuel, which is part of Bnei Barak, on Shabbos, you see almost 100 families walking with double carriages.
They're all
expert in this, lives there too.
Okay, I read the Eish of Chaim Kinievsky. Are you allowed to do this? Doesn't say. I'm pushing a lot of pages. So Rav Chaim Kanievsky basically said, I know that my father said, no way, and any child that comes into existence through this technique, nothing will become of him. He'll go liyatz latar b'sura. Rav Chaim said, I've seen thousands of these. He writes thousands. That's what he says there. I've seen thousands of these children. The Yireim, Shleimim, Talmidei Chachamim, Tzadikim Gemurim. Tzadikim. So, I don't know what my father was talking about. Tzmuter. I don't know what he was talking about. I don't know. He says. Anyone that comes, his father said this. No one's denying. I don't know. I've seen the Shleimim V'Yireim. Mutter. Now mutter, who's not going to do it? It's an amazing evolution of halacha. It's an amazing thing. Now you have to also appreciate. Now I'll just tell you something interesting. That you have to also appreciate is that first of all today, obviously, this is what he writes. This is also subject to a lot of things that he writes are his own chidushim, which you wonder sometimes. You say as far as this way, he says. A lot of this was based on fear of what's next. It's a very legitimate concern. As far as halacha, mitzer levatala, and hashkacha, that's easy to fix. Hashkacha, big deal. So you'll set up a system where no one's going to play games. It's a serious matter. Let's not fool ourselves. In Eretz Yisrael, it's very strict. In Eretz Yisrael, they take it very seriously. Because you don't want shilas of mamzerus and all that stuff, which is a whole topic in and of itself. So in Eretz Yisrael, they have mashkichim, layers of mashkichim. Okay, in America, not really, but whatever, there are laws. It also depends where and what. Okay, it depends. But in Eretz Yisrael, they've taken care of that problem to a very large degree. Moses Erel Levatala, it's not shakasha. Okay, it's not Levatala, it's for a purpose. It is what it is. So what was the main prohibition? So this is what he says. This is what Zvi Weizmann says, is that the psak was a gut reaction. What's next? You're Torah, there's a Messiah. There are certain ways you do things. You're really going way off. And there's a lot of fear. What's coming next? That's not halachic. That's not a halachic ban. That's a ban on Gidarim, Shmira, of the Mesoira. What's next? Over the last 25, 30 years, nothing happened. Nothing came next. Not in our circles.
More and more within the Orthodox circles of single women. Okay. Married.
Right, it's true.
It's gone.
We spoke about this.
Single
single mothers having children, but that's already not IV. That's already
it is one. Yeah.
I know it's obvious, but that's the, you're not dealing with a father and a mother. You're going into the, that's already another madrigal. Over here, we're dealing, you know, there is a difference. Rabbi Sai, in the case that we're discussing at this moment, we're not dealing with surrogatehood. We're not dealing with egg donors, sperm donors, organ donors. Rabbi Sai, the case that we're discussing is limited, that we're discussing. We're dealing with a married couple who's having a hard time conceiving, and we're dealing with their own zera. We're not dealing yet with egg donors, sperm donors, organ, incredible things. You can donate ovaries. You name, we have all the, we're not up to that. We're dealing over here with this limited type of situation. In that world, I mean, there was a lot. Today, being that, they're saying a svar, that being that today, there is clarity in exactly what we're dealing with. When this thing came about, it was like science fiction. And the unknown is very frightening to the Mesorah. It took years of education where people have a grasp, the average fellow, you can have a book like this, where you, a guy like me who knows from nothing can read and understand all the different categories. That's a major accomplishment of education, to understand exactly what you're dealing with. Then it's not the big mystery of the unknown. And then the Gedolei Yisrael are very comfortable. Why not? Ulai Bona Heimena is a very powerful concept. Okay, Loshevis Yitzara, Pri Revia, Ulai Bona Heimena. This is powerful stuff. And if we no longer, and the difference between today, 2022, and 1978, when the Stibler said some very frightening things, is the difference is, it's a big mystery, the big twilight zone. Where today, look, here's the book, read the book. You have a full comprehensive understanding of all the different things they're doing today out in the world, and you can the average person can get a grasp on what's going on, and Rabbanim can paskin mutter osur, mutter osur, mutter osur, and you know what we're dealing with. That is part of halacha. When you're dealing with the big, wide unknown, there's a need sometimes to make a geder, because you don't know what you're dealing with over here. But when you have clarity, you're educated in the science and the technique, that is a chelik of halacha. And that chelik of halacha creates a world of opportunity. But otherwise, would not exist. Okay. To be continued.